Hello and welcome back to Cooking the Books with me, Jilly Smith, the podcast which takes us through four food moments from the books of our favourite food writers. It's about all of life through the prism of food. And this week we're off to the stunning Welbeck country estate in the heart of Nottinghamshire to the School of Artisan Food to meet head baker Kevin Roberts, whose book Baking Sourdough takes us on a sensory journey to the roots of traditional bread making.
Baking is built into our DNA. We have been baking for thousands of years, and it is a primeval yearning.
I baked with him on a press trip to the school last month, where they're preparing for this year's summer school. I asked him what the students who come from all over the world can expect to find.
I guess, first of all, the setting that it's in. It's in the grounds of the Welbeck estate, that's surrounded by absolutely gorgeous buildings. It's got a fabulous history that goes way back a few hundred years. It's not open to the public, so I guess you could drive past and not even know it's there. But once you get in, it's the perfect setting for learning, I guess. I mean, as soon as I went to the school to go and have a look around before I took the job, I just thought this must be the most amazing place for learning. It's just such a calm environment.
It's more than that as well, isn't it? Alison Swan Parente, who owns the School of Artisan Food, she's one of our thought leaders, isn't she, in why we need to really engage with artisan baking, what it's all about. It's not just for posh people who want to take some time out and learn to cook. It's much more than that. It's about really understanding the role of artisan baking and cooking in our culture. Can you just explain what that ethos is?
Well, I guess the ethos really is, and you're correct, this really is the brainchild of Alison. And it was a direct result of skills that we were kind of losing, really. These bakery and butchery and cheese making skills. And Alison didn't want to see them go. As far as I'm concerned, I teach the bakery diplomas. It's really about looking at some of these old ways, such as using pre-ferments, adding fermentation into the breads to make not only a flavoursome bread, but a bread that was just good for you, just opposed to the supermarket kind of lesser cousins, I guess. So it was really kind of trying to get away from what they call a Charlie Wood method, which speeds up bread, takes away the fermentation process and nutrition.
I mean, what I saw on the press trip, and I was only there for a night and a day, was a real celebration of the old ways, the sort of the traditional ways. And you do talk about that in a lot in your book, and we'll go through your four food moments in a minute. I mean, what we saw when we were coming into the school through the courtyard was Sally Ann Hunt, your barbecue expert, setting up a series of beautiful old fire pits with a venison haunch freshly culled from the estate for our lunch. And it is that sort of immediate impact of, whoa, this is about food as it used to be, as it should be, as it will be again. And there's some kind of primal kind of thing that happens where we just feel so connected and it feels so good. What is that about?
You're right. It does feel as if you're going back in time. And I think that's a good thing. We've kind of lost our way a little bit with food, with baking. We all have lovely memories baking with grandmother, with mum. I think food is it's a time capsule of memories that you can tap into. And I think even for people that don't really bake that much, I find that when they come and they do a few classes with us, it kind of does inspire them to be able to go do that at home and teach their children. And in turn, they're actually teaching their grandchildren as well.
I think it's about fun. I think it's about getting your hands dirty, getting your hands into the dough. There's something incredibly comforting about that. And I think that there is a communal yearning and a sigh when we tap back into something that we've lost. In the Chorley Wood process, that's all about the supermarket culture, isn't it? And it's about the loss of time spent cooking, but also eating together. And that's a big part of what you do here. It's about offering an option to that whole system, that whole culture of supermarket and industry and retail and power and patriarchy. I mean, actually, what you're talking about is matriarchy, isn't it? You're talking about matriarchal skills. And these people who come to be students at the school, I mean, they are a lot of people who've had proper jobs. They're grown ups. They've, you know, they're coming back to school to reconnect in some way with that sense of what is really important. I mean, is that what you see?
I think it is. I every year when we start a new cohort of for the advanced diploma, and these come from varying age groups and social standing. We can have someone that, as we did last year, that is a doctor down in London. We've had accountants. It comes from all walks of life. And this, I find this common theme is maybe society or family peer pressure has kind of directed them towards money, but they've found that underlying there's always been this yearning to bake, and there's been certain points in their life that they have just said, I'm going to have a go. I think a lot of change came for people during lockdown when we had kind of time to just reset and think, are we on the right road? Is this what I want to do for the rest of my life? It hit a pause button for quite a lot of people. A lot of people that come to us a direct result of a lockdown change of how they want to live the rest of their life. And it's not based on money. It's not based because you're not going to be a millionaire being a baker. But you are, if you have that yearning, you will be satisfied on many more levels.
What about you, Kev? Why did you start to bake? You started very early, didn't you?
I guess my first paid job was, I must have been about 10 years old. I come from a small village in Yorkshire, and we had local fairs, fetes, where you would have gardening competitions, the largest onions and turnips, and you would also have stalls where you could enter competitions for the classic Victoria sponge and bread. And I remember it was £5 for the winner's fee for the adults, and it was £1 for the children. So I kind of thought of a money-making scheme where I would enter the Victoria sponge under my mum's name, Gladys Roberts. So I came in, brought it on, and I said, I brought this for my mum, and I won. £5 was a lot of money in those days. And then I thought, right, I'll go to the next fair in the next village next week, and I'll do the same. And it was at that point that the adorable ladies from the WI kind of accosted me coming out of one of these tents as I was heading towards my my bike with my winnings, because I won again. They said, where is Gladys Roberts? And I said, well, she's at home. I come in, I bring the goods, I hang around, and if she's fortunate to win, I pick up. And they said, whereabouts do you live? I told them, they said, put your bike in the back and we'll take you home. My mum had no idea of this, and I kind of begged them for forgiveness. I said, you can have the £5 back, I'm sorry. They were amazing with me. And they said, right, okay, we won't go and tell Mum. Keep the £5, but come back next week and we'll be in another village. The village was Garforth, I remember. And they were doing a talk on baking and they got me up to the front and they said, Kevin makes an amazing Victoria sponge. Kevin, show us how to make the Victoria sponge. And so that was, I guess, my first paid job. But I eventually left school in the 80s. At that time, I guess I was to be a miner. By the time I left school, the mines had ended. And I just got a job at a local bakery. Fell in love with it. It's been an amazing adventure, really. I've worked down in France. I've worked in the Lake District. Bakers seem to be quite transient people, as chefs are also.
And you're right, because bakers do move around a lot, don't they? Like chefs, stage is a very important part of learning to cook because you learn from each other. But sourdough is very much your thing, and your four food moments are about different types of sourdough. I mean, first of all, why sourdough?
And we have some amazing bakeries in this country now, but we didn't. Back in the day, I'd never heard the word sourdough or knew what this was. So I bought an old motorhome. I kind of went on a trip down to the south of France and started working in a bakery down there. And I remember when the guys asked me to... first of all, I hadn't seen any yeast. And I just presumed that these guys had already started earlier than I had that day. And they asked me to take the bread out of the oven. And I do remember opening the oven door and just getting this kick of flavour that just literally hit the back of your throat. It was a sour, malted, yeasty... I'd never experienced this. And I remember turning round to two old guys there and going, what is this? And they didn't call it sourdough. It was just called bread. And I remember we always made time to kind of cut open a loaf and have some lovely salted butter there. And I'd never tasted anything like this. They then kind of introduced me to their sourdough starter that I had no idea. And from that day, when they explained that it was literally Mother Nature that helped bakers, I just fell in love with the whole process and the flavour.
Explain what you mean by Mother Nature. I mean, the yeast is literally in the air around us, isn't it?
It is. It's, and isn't it quite fascinating? It is, the wild yeast is... It's kind of all around us. It's already on our hands. It's on every cup that we touch. A visual representation of wild yeast is if you see red grapes and you see the cloudy film that's around this, that is the wild yeast. It's trying to get to the sugar content. Once you kind of add water and flour, there's a process that happens where there's a combination of lactic and acetic acids. They kind of break down the starches and the wild yeast starts feeding from the natural sugars that are within flour. Of course, you have to kind of start off with your and build your sourdough starter so it's nice and active first. And that really does produce the yeast that produces the CO2 that proves your bread up. It's a longer process, but it's far better for it.
Let's talk about your first food moment, your best-selling loaf, the brie and spring onion.
That was a total accident. I used to have my bakery, Time Bakery in Wakefield. We'd only just kind of opened the bakery. It was all hands to the pump. I was working crazy, crazy hours. I remember it was 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd gone way too far without having any food. And I looked in the fridge. We made sandwiches through the day in the bakery. And there was just slim pickings. There was an old spring onion, kind of down the back of the fridge and a small chunk of brie. And I had an old baguette. I tried this. It was the only thing. And I don't know if this was just total and utter hunger, but it was the best thing I'd ever tasted. And I thought, what a flavour combination that was. So the next day I started working on developing the spring onion brie, and it became our best seller, and we bake it in the classes as well. Visually speaking, it looks amazing because we try to get the largest spring onions we can, and we put this in the bottom of the basket. The dough goes on the top. When we turn it out ready for baking, you have this big succulent spring onion that's fanned out across the bread, and that kind of caramelizes in the oven. It's an amazing bread. I love it.
And everyone loves cheese and onion. Oh, you can't go wrong there. Your second food moment shows actually what you can do. You can do anything with a sourdough once you've learned how to do it. Just putting a lot of seeds in this one seemed to attract the attention of somebody rather interesting. Do tell.
Well, everybody wanted to bake sourdough during lockdown. I was on furlough at the time, so I started to do Instagram lives there, and it was phenomenal. I did a demonstration of the 8-seeded sourdough, and I noticed that I'd been tagged in a photograph of my book with the loaf in someone's kitchen, and I thought, oh, that looks amazing. So I did comment, and it was a lovely lady called Shane Spall. And on investigating, I don't want to say stalking, but on investigating, I saw her husband, Timothy Spall, which kind of took me back to my childhood where me and Mum used to watch Alfieda's Own Pet. She was never interested in what I did to baking. As soon as I said that Timothy Spall's favourite bread was mine, she was over the moon.
Your third food moment is your wife's favourite bread. She's probably more of a fan than your mum is. The walnut and Stilton sourdough.
Well, Stilton, walnut, what's not to love? It's a complete meal encased in bread. I've kind of changed the recipe now. We make Stitchelton cheese on the estate, and the Stitchelton is my wife's favourite. So we've incorporated that. But it does not matter how much I increase the Stitchelton in the bread. My wife will always say, I think you could put a little bit more in there. But because it's such a soft cheese, what I do is I cut this into chunks. Then I freeze the chunks, and then when I've made the dough, I put the cheese in there. As it bakes, it just bakes in a big chunk and just kind of oozes into the crumb structure. It's an amazing bread.
You can just do anything with a sourdough, can't you? I mean, your last food moment is the story of your wild garlic rolls.
I was trying to do a design bread and a flavour bread, and this was a wild garlic, took the leaves, chop those down, use those as an inclusion, and then the small little flower that lasts just a week or so, the white flower, which is edible, I just prick the top of the roll and insert this flower to make it look spectacular. My wife decided she'd come along and take a photograph of this. This went onto social media. I then got an order for these rolls for a wedding, and I think they were about 500 rolls. But then it was sourcing the wild garlic. At dusk, I had to go to a stately home that I'm not going to mention and go into these grounds to try to get as much of this wild garlic as I could. And my wife had to help me in this venture as well. It's a beautiful flavour, some nice and delicate. I'm now lucky that I live just outside the Welbeck estate, and we have a forest that is full of wild garlic. And we are actually going to spend some part of our weekend going over and grabbing a few of these. So I'm going to make a few of these over the weekend.
The summer school is coming up. This is 40 short courses in July and August. This is quite a different offer, isn't it, to the much more immersive, long, six-month courses. In what way does it differ?
We did our first summer school last year. It was amazing. It is a learning experience, but it is like being on holiday, because what we do with these guys is one day they'll come, they'll bake with me, and then they'll go off to a trip to, say, Tuxford Mill to watch how we produce grains. Then they'll come in and do some vimoiserie or patisserie. And then they'll go to visit Stitchelton Dairy. And then the kind of crescendo moment after they've kind of learnt how to make sourdough, different types, and the patisserie, we then have a picnic by the lake, which was amazing. We were blessed with great weather. So we made all the products. Luckily we have a large tractor that has seating for about 20 people. So the tractor comes and collects the students. They all get on there and we go through the deer park all the way up to the lake with the backdrop of the abbey at the end of the lake there. And we just have afternoon tea on Bon China and maybe a little bit of bubbly as well. And then the students go out on the lake on the boats. It is quintessentially English. It is amazing. And the students I had last year were fantastic. We had people from all corners of the world. And for those guys to just immerse themselves in that kind of setting and around surrounded nature, every day these guys would, because we supply them with bicycles, and they would go to Clumber Park. It was a proper, a real experience for them, a baking and just a general experience summer holiday for them.
Going back to your original mission to teach people to connect again with something very primal, something very human, you know, while those summer schoolers are sitting around the lake drinking their bubbly, do you think they leave with that sense of satisfaction?
You know, I think they do. I was not surprised one bit that during lockdown, people turned to baking. It was comforting. Whether you're a baker or not, whether your career is baking or not, you don't have to go back many generations before you had a baker within your ancestry. Baking is built into our DNA. We have been baking for thousands of years, and it is a primeval yearning. We're all bakers.
Thanks for listening. Do head over to Extra Bites on my Substack to get a taste of the School of Artisan Food. And I'll see you next week.